Oh, hello. This is Mina Fisher, Town Guard. The podcast you're about to listen to is part of the Professional Casual Network. To find more podcasts like this, visit professionalcasual.com.
The Professional Casual Network has gear. If you're looking to get some sweet merch from Beards, Ears, and Skulls, Grim Podcast, A Perilous Adventure, Arachne, and Infinity Podcast, or a whole lot more, you can check out streamlabs.com/professionalcasualnetwork1/merch. Also, don't go to Built Bar anymore. They're not a sponsor and they're dead to us. So head over to monumenthobbies.com and use code professionalcasual at checkout for 5% off every single order you possibly, you know, like order for like paints and board games and stuff. Right? Thanks.
Hey, my electric casuals, and welcome to another episode of Beards, Ears, and Skulls. I totally did not cut Dan off while he was telling me about his name, hitting the start go button. Start go.
Start
that's
go.
What it's called. On Zencaster.
You're going to learn today.
On Zencaster, it's start go. That's what we do to hit start and go.
Does it actually say start?
No, it doesn't at all. It says record.
You're lying.
No, I'm just
lying. Well, listeners are used to that.
Yeah, that's fair. By the way, this is Dan. I don't know if you've heard of him, but there he is.
Hello,
Dan. And in a strange turn of events, Dylan's not streaming today. Ben is.
Yeah, Ben is currently streaming some Silk Song.
What? Oh, hey, recording's over, folks. Would love to see you. Gotta go, bye.
Yeah, he's been deep into Silk Song since it came out. So if you're interested in gorgeous Metroidvania platformers with bug aesthetic, check out the Twitch at twitch.tv/professionalcasualnetwork. Ben has been streaming that like crazy, so it'll be on all the VODs as well.
And if you're not into what Dan just said, good. Do better. Before we get started, though, I want to send a huge dowie thank you to our beautiful and wonderful patrons who support us over on patreon.com/professionalcasual. These folks help us do what we do every day, keep the lights on, and keep Tim from eating the words that come out of my mouth, apparently. Or his loots. Huge.
His loots?
His loots, which is one of the scenarios we're talking about. Special thanks to our top patrons. That's all right. Dan got there in the end.
I was thinking L-U-T-E-S, not L-O-O-T-S. I was like, why does he have loots?
No, it's our loots.
It's just loot. That's plural and singular.
You know how many loots we have here in the basement? Zero. Anyways, thank you to our current big subbies of X-Paxis, Rob and Iron Maze, Tau and Dagna, Briar Mage, Cider Drinker, Kilted Sparky, Random Guy, Cliff Jumper, Velicenda, Pagan Prince, David, Handsome Andy. Wow, Handsome Andy. I got to change their names up because I feel like I fail every time on Handsome Andy. Brooks.
That one's not even difficult.
I don't know. It's Andy that's handsome. It gets me all flustered.
Handsome Handy.
Nope.
I realized that as soon as I said it, just switching the first letters. Whoops. Sorry,
this is,
Andy.
This is the Nesh podcast now. Welcome in, everybody.
Oh, man. We got to put some warnings.
Yeah, for real. We've got a Brooks, a Chris Dillard, a Cord, a Bastion, and a Bangarang. Bastion's back, baby!
Bangarang!
Ah, Bangarang's such
a good character name. Stabbed a Jabberslith in our game this morning.
Bangarang's dead. That's awesome.
It was great. And then he got blood on him and it hurt him. And it was the only damage my Jabberslith did because monsters suck in that game.
Oh, it reminds me of that Wafurp game that I was playing. And you had this like big old giant or troll or something like that. And we just charged it with lances and killed it before it got to do anything. That was fun.
It sounds familiar.
It was fun for me specifically. Dan got really upset. Anyways, we also have a tier, patreon.com/professionalcasual. It's called the Electric Casuals tier, where you can show love for this show directly. We've got Lou G, Tony M, Meerkat, Stefan, Rev Right Med, Cliff, Elite Age Showdown was canceled, Anthony, Manuel, the Neil Harris, Lil Willie, Carlos, and Nick Baran. Thank you so much, everybody, for your support. We sincerely appreciate you, Dan.
Baran. That's me. Yes.
While start us off with the games that you've played in the hobby. Actually, we'll talk about games played later. Hobby now.
Yeah, a lot of the episode will end up being a game that we played earlier this week, which was awesome. But hobbied, I finally finished the unit of five Marauder Horseman.
Hey-o.
Well, I need to add snow to the base, but that'll take 5 seconds. So point for by the time this episode goes out, they will be completely done. Oh my God, it took forever.
So many Gribbly bits.
Yeah, they're so detailed because they're the newest Dark Oath versions of the models, and there's a lot going on. So it took forever. I've been getting some paint on Goros Warhoof at the same time.
Nice.
And then I got my unit of 20 Marauders with hand weapon shield up there ready to be next. And they're just like the horsemen, just without horses. So I expect that unit. I would really like to get that unit done before
the event.
The event on October 4th that we're going to be talking about for the vast majority of today.
Yep.
That's the plan. I want to have them done if I can.
Done if you can.
Or at least on the way, you know?
I will have part of a unit fully painted. Does that count?
Sure. Yeah. Anything is better than no painted.
And a war machine that'll be fully painted, but I didn't paint it. Does that also count?
What war machine is that?
A cannon that I bought from Chuck that he painted like 30 years ago.
Oh, you should get more paint on models.
So speaking of hobbies on my side, I've been painting a lot of terrain for Legion. A lot of scatter terrain, boxes, mainly boxes.
Boxing.
There's something else, Dan, that I forgot to show you.
Boxing and donuts.
Boxing and donuts. I got
this. What are you going to show me?
Girl? I got this weird like stone thing completed.
Nice.
Looks really gray. Cool. I just got to put, it is gray. How'd you know?
Is and it then, more different gray? Oh, no, it was black originally.
Yes. I got to put snow on it. And then the quintessential, when you're playing Star Wars planet stuff, shield generator, right? So especially snow planet, right? And that one is, you guessed it, also gray.
I mean, it's Star Wars. It's gray, black, or white. That's virtually it.
It's gray or beige. Anyways.
That's true.
Yeah, so there's a lot of that I want to get to at some point, but I don't have Lizardmen, so I can't really
yet.
It's so funny every time. My kids will come up to me and they're like, hey, can I lizard? And I'm like, yes, you can. Of course you can. Lizard. Anytime. No, I'm...
Oh.
But yeah, I actually was also painting some fantasy terrain as well, which I've already showed Dan. These are things that actually Brooks got us some 3D print. What are they called? STLs?
Yeah, STLs and filament.
Yeah, and a bunch of filament. And there's a double building that has a stone archway. And I'm showing the camera, but nobody can see it. This is double building.
It looks cool.
Right. And I got the stone archway part of the building complete. And I'm working on the other part of the building. And I started painting it with a brush. And there's a lot of what's that? Tudor style with the...
Tudor.
Shut up. With the... the like crossbeam wooden stuff. And I started painting with a paintbrush and I'm like, this sucks. I wish my airbrush wasn't friggin' broken. I really think it's my compressor. I need a new compressor, but it's going to be like $100 friggin' at least to get a compressor for this thing.
Yeah.
And it makes sense because my compressor is like 7 years old, maybe more. So it doesn't last forever, but yeah, I need to buckle down and buy a damn compressor at some point, and I'll be able to knock these buildings out lickety-splickety.
Lickety-split.
All right. And you have a ton of them as well, right? I only took like half of them.
Of the buildings?
Yeah.
Yeah, I printed so many of those for that event. I have a couple that I painted, trying to make them look dirty. The Pro Acryl Nuche stuff worked pretty well.
Oh, yeah. Really
thin it out and use it. It was just like Walmart dollar brown paint, you know, that's acrylic, but the Nuche works with it because it's acrylic and it made it go pretty quick, which was nice. I got a whole bunch of those still to do. But yeah, we've been moving along with things. We have kind of gotten a challenge. Brooks is making us feel bad for not producing battle reports like we want to for this game. So apparently him and Dr. D are going to do one where they're going to be us.
I can't even explain how excited I am for this.
I really hope it actually happens because it sounds hilarious. One of them is going to wear a blue t-shirt and just put a piece of tape on it and then write the word Lions on it, which is we're recording on a Sunday. So I'm wearing my Aiden Hutchison jersey for the Lions right now. But I told Taylor, like, okay, we have to produce some just to troll them and get it out before they do.
Yep. So you know, head over to the YouTube.
That and, campaign.
Yep. Look for what are we doing? The Wolves of the Sea versus High Elves sort of thing? Is that what's going on?
Yeah, that free like three scenario campaign they put out like a year ago at this point, maybe not quite that long, but that would be perfect one for us to run because it's 500 and then like 1,000 and then 2,000 or 1,500 or something like that. Like it's a little escalation type thing. So like,
yeah,
we could feasibly record two of those in a day.
Fair. We just need a halfway decent looking terrain for the scenarios. You and I will put our butts together and we'll figure it out. Because that's where all my thoughts come from, is my butt. Anyways, but so speaking of Brooks and Dr. D, we are going to be heading over to Amesbury, Massachusetts on 10-4, good buddy, which is October 4th, for the Beards, Ears, and Skulls treasure hunt event that Brooks put together. I'm pretty sure Dr. D is also going to be there and playing, I think.
I believe so.
So this is going to be an absolute ridiculous blast, and it is what today's episode is about, is this event, the different scenarios that you can play. And depending on where you're driving from and whether or not you're Dr. D, it could only take a few hours or 700 hours to get to Amesbury, Massachusetts.
It's very true.
It's very true. So Dan and I will both be there. It's going to be an absolute blast.
Yeah.
Where I'm actually making it to an old world event. It just needed my name on it in order for me to go.
For real. Oh my God. There's one up in Syracuse in like 2 weeks and I just can't do it. Like we have recording for the Doomstones campaign, Valley of the Doomed show. And we just could not reschedule it anywhere else with the cast. So it was like, and then I realized that's the week before this event anyway. And it was like, all right, but they got like, they have like 15, 16 people signed up. So I don't feel as bad about not being able to go.
Yeah. The last one was like Mother's Day or something. It was rough. So obviously we couldn't make it to that, but I definitely absolutely want to go to one of those. So
just constantly something in the way, but you know, that's life. I'm sure everybody listening understands that, like, yeah, that's kind of how things go. You try to play this game and then life gets in the way.
And life says, hey, what if you didn't though? And you're like, oh, well, I guess that's okay. All right.
Hey, what do you got to say? Hey.
Ugh, anyways, the rules, the scenarios for this event are going to be in the description. Taylor, remember to put these in the description. That's the wrong one. This is Gold Rush. I got the wrong ones, Dan.
What did you do?
The biggest, dumbest idiot ever.
It's called Treasure Hunt.
Treasure Hunt. There we go. I got it now. Don't worry, folks. I know
what. Good job. I'm proud of you.
I know what I'm doing. So Gold Rush is Everwinter. That's another one. We'll talk about that.
Yeah.
Everwinter is dope. Go to Everwinter.
It's Old World's going to be at Everwinter near Boston in December. We'll talk about that a bunch too when we get closer.
So this is called Treasure Hunt. This event takes place in caves and the Underway, the ancient dwarven highway running under the World's Edge, mountains, and beyond. As the scenarios take place underground, the following Underway's rules will apply in all games. So Underway rules are something that I think I kind of tipped Brooks off to, which is from the Blood in the Badlands campaign from 8th edition, where they had a whole part of the campaign that was just Skaven versus dwarves underground. Very awesome. Very, very awesome. So we've got these Underway rules, which is watch ahead, low ceilings and stalactites pose hazards for flying units. Any unit using its fly speed makes to make a charge move or a march move must take a dangerous terrain test. On a one, they lose a wound. It's dark in there. Anything more than 6 inches for shooting is considered long range. So, you know, dwarves had it bad enough.
Which is funny because he's also a dwarf player. So,
and then what goes up can't come down, but barman attacks against units out of line of sight cannot be used. Right, so you can't just be like that general direction over there. You actually have to hit them and see them. Right,
can't quite arc it like you normally would.
Listen, you know me with my arcs. You know what I'm saying? I'm an arcer.
What does that mean?
I don't have any idea. But anyways, I decided to bring in that case a very shooty list. So it's going to be good for me.
You're playing dwarves and you're going to bring a shooty list?
I know, it's weird. I went more thematic with this. I'm trying Expeditionary Force for the first time. So
what? Okay.
What?
You see the scenarios ahead of time. You know what is coming.
It's going to be fun, Dan.
Why are you further nerfing yourself?
Because I want to have fun, Dan.
Oh,
fair. After a game, though, I was like, maybe I should bring fatties. I got to be honest.
Yeah, for real. I'm surprised you don't or not. What?
Hey, Dan.
Yes, me?
Stop talking and read. What's the first thing?
The trail begins. So Brooks made up all these scenarios, and Taylor and I are trying to help him just to kind of fine-tune and whatnot. We did play test the last scenario, so we're going to kind of go through the first two and then talk about our experience with that last one. And he wrote up a little story blurb for each one. So this one's called The Trail Begins. So recently, your lands have been plagued by an eruption of squigs and trolls. Your forces have been dispatched to do something about it. After tracking them to a nearby cave system, you discover that apparently yours wasn't the only faction with the thought. While you prepare to descend on the squigs and troll nests, another force appears. The Kurs must have been planning to ambush you while you were busy with the monsters. As your forces move to engage, you notice an odd body in the middle of the cave.
Listen, last time I noticed odd bodies, it didn't go well for me.
Odd bodies. So we've got a standard pitch battle deployment 12 inches up on the long edges. And then we have five different places marked in No Man's Land. The very center of the board is the strange body, which is part of the victory conditions. So we'll get to that in a moment. And then we have two T's and two S's diagonal from each other. And these represent squig caves and troll caves.
And Brooks has been excruciatingly busy these caves and making these caves and printing and painting squigs and trolls, and they look awesome. So these are things that you will see at this event. Physically, they're not just going to be little markers on the table. They are actual terrain pieces, which is really cool.
Yeah, it's looking amazing. He does such a great job with busting out this terrain stuff so fast.
Absolutely.
And it looks good. So for setup, like I said, that marker representing the bodies in the very center. Small hills should be placed 8 inches from each side's deployment zone towards the center and staggered. So there are two on each side of the board, approximately 3 feet from each other on that side, to kind of describe where they're shown on the picture.
Yep.
On each hill is placed a cave. A marker of some kind is placed within each cave to indicate its type, troll or squig. Players should place D3 additional terrain pieces using alternating turns with the winner of a roll-off going first. So this one's going to have a fair bit of terrain on it with four caves that are on hills and then D3 others. So I guess you could only have five pieces of terrain.
Sure.
So it might not be that much. Deploy is normal. The biggest difference there is that no scout or vanguard move can bring a player within 6 inches of a troll cave or squig cave or the body in the center.
Yep.
Which is important because, you know, that's it would be too much of an advantage for the scenario for people to be able to just start on the objectives. First turns as normal. Whoever finished deploying first adds one. And, you know, it's just like normal that scouts count against that now.
Yep.
Up to
which
six
is good
turns.
For me, by the way. Good for me.
Why
I
want to
shoot you.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so special rules. Underway rules apply, of course. Any unit that ends its turn within 6 inches of a troll cave gets randomly attacked by a few trolls and suffers D6 strength 5 AP 1 hits. Any unit that ends its turn within 12 inches of a squig cave gets randomly attacked by squigs and suffers 2D6 strength 3 AP 1 hits.
I think I'd rather the squigs attack.
I don't know.
Could only be a lot, though. 12? Ugh.
Yeah. So yes, this is meant to be kind of punishing. It's meant to force you to decide, do I take the long way around or do I just take the hits and go through?
Right.
Because you're going to be within 12 of the squig ones pretty easily. They're more towards the center of the board.
Yeah.
But they're also right near that body that you want to get to. But you might only have to deal with it for like a turn because a unit with unit strength 5 or more that ends its turn in base contact with a troll cave or squig cave may attempt to collapse it during the remaining move subphase. If at the beginning of the next start of turn subphase, the unit is still in base contact with the cave and still has unit strength 5 or more, is not engaged in combat, and is not fleeing, the cave collapses. I think it's absolutely necessary to include all of those.
Yeah. Yep.
Like buts. And then once collapsed, the cave no longer causes trolls or squig hits. You also receive 200 victory points if the cave you collapsed was a troll cave, and you score 100 victory points if the cave you collapsed was a squid cave. So not only does it keep you from taking more hits, but it's victory points.
Hey, you know how you can get more victory points?
How?
Picking up bodies, specifically one of them.
Oh, yeah.
So real quick, before we get to that, did you say the no units deployed using scouts about the body? No. All right. So no unit deployed using scouts or vanguard may attempt to collapse a cave or pick up the body in its first turn. Makes sense. And any unit with a unit strength 5 or more that is base contact with the body at the end of the movement phase may pick it up. Should that unit panic, flee, or lose a round of combat, including giving ground, it immediately drops the body where it is prior to moving. Should the unit be moving as the result of losing a combat, the unit which won the combat, should it be unit strength 5 or more, may immediately pick up the body. The unit carrying the body may not use any fly movement. So essentially, you find this body, you pick it up, all day long you'll have 350 victory points at the end of the game.
Yeah, if you're still holding on, whoever's holding on to in the end gets a ton of victory points.
Incredible. Absolutely incredible. Which is great. I love this. Like, hey, if you flee or for any reason you think you're going to die, you're just like, dude, not worth it. Goodbye. Just drop this right here. Which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
And you can't just put in a gyrocopter and, like, you know, fly away with it too, which is great. But it's not unit strength 5. Anyways.
Also, something we kind of missed when we playtested the third scenario. Those are the only victory conditions. There's not
points
for, you know, destroying your opponent. We do need to clarify with Brooks is things like, do you still get points for slaying the enemy general and collecting banners?
Yeah, that's a good point. I would imagine not, since the next scenario says all their scoring is per normal rules.
Yeah, so I think it's just those things to score. You need to take out these caves and try to get the body.
Yep. So it's not about killing your opponent unless they own the body.
Yeah, and then they got to go down.
Then they got to go down. Yep, I might make my ranger unit bigger. Anyways, there's an epilogue here. As your forces examine the body, which was found in the field, they discover a journal and crude map. Apparently, this person was an explorer who, along with his group, had found a sealed dwarven vault. Ooh. While the group was heading back to seek assistance in opening the vault, mistrust took over and the group scattered, each aiming to be the first to enlist aid in opening the vault.
Scatter!
This is a prime opportunity to follow the map yourself and be the first to grab whatever lies within the vault. So we come across this body as we're trying to figure out what's going on with these trolls and squigs. And you're like, oh my gosh, there's a vault somewhere. Now we got to go find it.
Yay.
So game two is Journey Through the Underway. Traversing the Underway is no simple feat. No, it's a lot of feats. It's very
big. Are your feeties moving? Then you're traversing the Underway.
That's true. Many parts have collapsed, been taken over by hostile forces, or are prone to other hazards, like bacon. While traversing one particularly treacherous section, you spot a hostile force, perhaps one which also seeks the treasure. Could one of you be reading the map upside down? Treasure. You're going in the opposite directions. There's no other option. The only way is through them. As you head forward, a faint tremor ripples through the ground and dust falls from the ceiling. So this is kind of like your what's that scenario called? Battle for the Pass.
Yeah,
I don't know what it's called now. Where you are deploying on the short edges and you're deploying 18 inches up, which is pretty interesting. So game is played lengthwise on the table. Players play D3 plus one terrain pieces, rolling off to determine who plays the first piece. After each piece is placed, roll a scatter die and move the terrain D6 inches in the direction indicated, moving in the direction of the arrow on a hit, stopping should it touch another terrain feature or the edge of the battlefield, which is one of the newer terrain rules, and I really like it a lot. The players roll off for the winning side, choosing their deployment zone and who will deploy first. Players deploy their armies using alternated methods like normal, and then once deployment is done, whoever deployed first gets plus one, game length of 6 rounds.
Plus one.
Plus one. Obviously, we have the Underway rules, so it's dark.
Ooh.
Dan, what do you got?
I'm excited for this next one.
Read it out.
The Cave-In. At the start of so this is where it's more than just Battle for the Pass, right?
Yep.
So we got, at the start of each player's start of turn phase, that player rolls a D6. On a 5+, part of the cave collapses. The controller the controlling player places a 3-inch template anywhere on the battlefield. The template will then scatter D6 inches in a random direction, or stay on a hit. Any model under the template risks being hit, as the normal rules, by strength 4 AP2 attack as a ceiling falls down and bonks you. After resolving the attack, place a 3-inch marker where the collapse occurred. This marker is now impassable terrain through which no line of sight may be drawn. Any unit which would be under the terrain should be moved by the shortest distance possible distance, so that is no longer under the marker. Oops, you just got caved in on. You just got caved on.
Yeah, I like caved on. I think that one's better. I'm trying to think.
Could you be got caved? Stalactited. You
get stalactited, nerd.
And then the long side of the board is impassable, again, as we're going down like this corridor.
Yeah, so it's literally just a sheer wall. You cannot flee through it. You can't pursue, pivot, any of it. You cannot move through that part at all.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, yep, yep.
So what's cool about this, so you got the ceiling falling on you, a normal victory point scoring for killing stuff, and then 50 for each unit in your opponent's deployment zone at the end of the game.
So this is where I'm like, uh-oh, dwarves. You know, so my thought with this scenario is shoot them off the table. That's the whole point to me right now, which is perfect for me. Again, Expeditionary Force. I'm going to be minding my way downtown, walking fast. Not true at all, dwarves. But this is interesting. I like this one a lot because the first one is like relatively complicated. There's a lot going on. And then this one is like, just go to the other side of the board. Like you're following your map. They're following a different map, obviously. Just get through before all these, the entire part of the cave collapses in and kills all of you. Right. So what do we got for that epilogue there, Don?
Your forces rush down the underway as the rumbles intensify. Behind you, the stone crashing to the floor of the tunnel continues to build as a complete collapse occurs. The vibrations knocking soldiers from their feet. Whatever happens, there's no turning back now. There's only forward towards the vault.
Bessie. And then we get into game 3, which is the game that Dan and I actually played last week. And it was it was so much fun.
It was a great time.
The game was incredible. We oopsied on like how the victory conditions worked, but it worked out in my favor.
We were able to test how the scenario worked properly, yeah, to a point.
Yes.
But this is the treasures at hand. You want to read the scenario, the what do you call it?
Yes. Flavor text.
Yeah.
After several more days following the map and watching your supplies dwindle, you at last come to a large stone door of masterful design. This must be the entrance to the dwarf vault. With a combination of praise, cleverness, brute force, and possibly a fair bit of shouting, you're able to guide your forces into opening the door, which leads into a massive carved chamber. In the middle of that chamber stand 3 mausoleums adorned with dwarven rune and stonecraft. As you start forward to claim whatever lies inside the mausoleum, another massive door on the other side of the chamber bursts open.
What?
Another army has arrived at the same time and intends to claim whatever lies inside for themselves. There's only one way to settle this. Rock, paper, scissors. Ready? Rock, paper, scissors, says shoot.
Why do you say scissors? Oh, we both did scissors. All right.
Rock, paper, scissors, says shoot.
Oh, you did rock, I did scissors.
I win! And that's what happened.
That sounds familiar. Spoiler alert, I got wrecked.
Yeah, very much so.
So I obviously have been painting up those Marauder Horsemen. I wanted to take the Wolves of the Sea for a spin. Mm-hmm. And I figured I wanted to try out Frydahl the Chainmaker. Unfortunately, because Ambush is not good, I didn't use like any of her special rules. So for the actual event, she's out of the list because she's not as good as I thought. Because I forgot how flails work.
Yeah, you sure did.
That was a big deal.
That was a huge deal.
Yeah, so with her, I had a sorcerer on foot that was a level 3, and he took demonology, I think.
I think so, yeah.
Rolled okay spells, and Mark of Nurgle, so he had the Stream of Corruption, or no, Corpulescence. What's it called?
I don't know, it's your army.
The plus 1 toughness enchantment.
Yeah, Fleshy Abundance.
That's it, Fleshy Abundance. And then I had 20 Berserkers with Flails, and then 22 Marauders with Hand Weapon Shield, the 5 Horsemen with Cavalry Spears and Javelins, and then 2 units of 3 skin wolves.
Which you are changing.
I think that's everything.
And,
and a unit of 10 Huskarls with flails.
Oh, yeah, they lasted.
I forgot that they were on the table ever.
They were on the table for a turn. That was certainly correct. Hang on, let me pull up my fatties real quick. Fatties. So we had some treasure hunt fatties. I decided to go with ogres, and I did my wonderful cave ogres, which have no magic items whatsoever. And Dan, I cheated with my cave ogres because they're also not supposed to have black powder weapons. Thankfully, the lead belchers did nothing.
Oh, like I say, you cheated. Was like, oops, I messed up my own limitations.
Correct.
I impose upon myself.
Correct. Yeah. Say, I am the worst ever. So essentially, what I should have had is just another unit of ogre bulls.
That's funny.
I'll go through what I had. Let's see. Could I even fit? No, I couldn't fit another unit of bulls. I'd have to figure something else out. Anyways, I had a tyrant as the general. He was a giant breaker and giant and an iron fist, and that was it. So he was just hand weapon, iron fist. And I was like, there's no way I'm going to be able to do anything with this guy. And he was a monster. He was an absolute monster. I mean, he took Friedel down 2 wounds in the first challenge.
Did he?
Shut up.
Yeah, he did.
So Giant Breaker gives you +1 strength, and they cannot refuse a challenge, and they can't flee as a charge reaction or their unit, right? So yeah. Tyrant, all that sort of stuff. We had a Firebelly who was a level 2 wizard, and obviously I gave him a battle magic, hoping to get Fireball, and I did not. What I got was Pillar of Fire and Arcane Urgency, and neither one of them did anything. Arcane Urgency I got off once, I think, and then just
I didn't
really
a little bit.
Yeah, it was fine. What I should have done instead was taking Hammer Hand like Dan told me to, but I decided not to for some stupid reason.
I said it mostly as a joke, but it actually would have been much more helpful.
Well, the thing is, it's a fire belly in a unit of iron guts. They want to be in combat. I should have taken it. You know,
it's one of the few wizards that does want to be in combat.
Right. Exactly.
Probably because he's got like 5 wounds or whatever, 4 wounds.
Yeah. Dude is just an absolute tank. He's tough as 5 with 4 wounds. Yeah. And I gave him a great weapon, and then he got a BFA, but we'll get to that later. We had 7 ogre bulls with full command and iron fist. I friggin' love bulls. We had 4 iron guts with full command, and they were veteran, which I totally forgot about, but I don't think it came into play.
I don't know, man.
And then I think that was it. And then I had 3 ogre bulls with iron fist as well, and I think I gave them a champion. Yes, I gave them a champion as well. I had 3 Mournfang Cavalry with a champ and a musician for reasons. Iron Fists and Light Armor. I couldn't afford the heavy armor. And then I had 2 Lead Belchers. Excuse me. I don't think I had any upgrades on those. You ate those for breakfast. And then I had 3 Scouting Gorgers. And let me tell you what's dope is scouting with 3 Gorgers. It's really fun. No, it was great, is what you meant.
It was terrifying.
what you mean is great.
That's what I said. Yeah,
that's my fatties list, and they did work, let me tell you. They absolutely minced up a whole bunch of Warriors of Chaos.
Yeah, I had some on the table at the end.
I was going to say, I didn't table you, right?
No.
No, you had a bit.
I had just over 1/2 a unit of the Berserkers left. That was it. So yeah, things did not go great. I certainly could have deployed better, as you know, is a typical song and dance here. But for this scenario, it's again standard deployment for 12 inches up along the long edge, and then we had 3 pieces of terrain across the middle that were mausoleums, one dead center, and then the others equidistant from it.
Yep.
And each mausoleum is a major piece of terrain because you can get a cool item from it. And by cool item, we mean, holy crap, these things are busted beyond belief. And that's the point.
And there's a little tidbit in here that says, yes, I know these are not balanced. That's the whole point.
Yep.
So Your setup, like Dan said, is you put the mausoleum straight in the center of the board, and they're, what, 24 inches away from each other, and 12 inches, the two on the sides are 12 inches from the short edge.
Yeah.
And then you roll D3 plus two additional terrain, and they cannot be placed within 6 inches of a mausoleum. They're considered impassable, those mausoleums, and they should be less than 3 inches in diameter, which I think we oopsied on. I think we had a couple that were pretty big, but that's okay. So, deployment is normal, first turn, normals, six rounds, underway rules, and then how do we loot this? Well, the way that it was is any lone character or a unit which contains a character could loot it, and after the game Dan and I played, we were like, honestly, unit champions should be able to loot as well, because we had two characters.
Right. My argument was that, especially, I think if it was 2,000 points, just characters would be fine. Because you're going to have probably at least three per side, but
sure.
At 1500, like taking my new list has three characters, but that's for various reasons.
Yeah.
I think it's important because we ended up only looting one spot.
Correct.
And there were times that I had unit champions in the air, at least one of the other ones, and I couldn't even try to get a thing because
I had your characters tied up in combat the whole time.
Yeah, because you know, they're up against ogres, so they couldn't get out of combat.
It's weird how great movement six is. It's so fast. Just so fast. Anyways, so a lone character, a unit that contains a character or champion that ends its turn in base contact with a mausoleum may loot it. To do so, the controlling player rolls D6 on a 4-up. They find something. When you find something, you roll on the D3 table below. Each mausoleum may only be looted once, and each time, each item may only be rolled once. So there are only those three items on the table. A character or champion must use the item they draw, even if they have another item that is better or preferable. Players should reroll in the event they roll an item which is previously looted. Where a unit contains a character and a champion, obviously the character is going to take the item because they're like, dude, that's mine. Piss off.
Hey, give me that.
Right. Roll number one is a mortar.
A dash mortar.
Because obviously is for mortar. Everyone knows A is for mortar. The most powerful range hand weapon known to dwarf. A character or champion equipped with this may use it to make a number of range attacks equal to the character or champion's attack characteristic. The A mortar suffers no penalties to shooting other than any imposed in the staff of the found arc, regardless of source. Which is range, spell, cover, magic items. They always hit on whatever you're normally hit on. Has a 36-inch range and quick shot. Any hit by the A mortar causes D3 hits, each at strength 8, AP 3, and are magical.
I just had a great idea.
Yeah.
To simplify that a little bit,
mm-hmm.
It should just always hit on 4s, because dwarves have ballistic skill 3.
Shut up. Shut up so much.
Idea.
Shut up. Yeah, but dwarf engineers are ballistic skill 5. Thank you very much.
No, they're not. Don't lie.
Nice Goku pants, you nerd.
thanks.
Number two is the staff of the found arc. May be used to make ranged or melee attacks.
What? Both?
As a ranged weapon, it shoots a beam of light that travels 6d6 inches. 66 is a lot of inches. In a straight line, any unit, friend, or foe, regardless of whether they're engaged in combat, that the line passes over, suffers d6 plus 1, strength 7, AP 3 magical hits. Lone characters within 3 inches of a friendly unit, the same troop type, of at least strength, unit strength 10, are not affected by this range attack, even if they fall under the line, nor can a character be singled out from a unit they joined, even if the model falls under the line. Any unit wounded by this beam suffers minus 1 to hit for the remainder of the game. A character that was part of a unit that was hit and then leaves the unit remains subject to the minus 1. Melted eyeballs tend to stay with you.
Melted eyeballs.
As a melee weapon, the wielder of the Staff of the Found Arc gains plus D3 extra attacks at strength plus 2, AP 3, and magical attacks. In addition, any unit wounded by the staff suffers minus 1 to hit for the remainder of the game, same as above. I just realized that this is the Lost Ark thing. I just realized what he was playing at here.
It's in the name, the Staff of the Found Ark.
No, I get it now with the melted eyeballs. It got me. Yeah. It took me a minute.
Yeah, it's Indiana Jones reference. Come on.
No, I got there in the end.
I'm proud of you.
So this is super dope, and the one that I got was the big freaking axe. Read it to me, Dan.
The BFA 9000.
9000.
Big freaking axe, 9000.
True. Oh, we're going to change it to 9001.
For a dwarf lord. So it's over 9000?
So now it's over 9000.
This weapon grants plus D6 extra attacks, strikes first, strength plus 4 magical attacks. No armor or ward saves are permitted against this, but you can take regen.
Here's the problem with this axe is the whole time my firebelly had it this game, I forgot it had plus D6 extra attacks.
I did. Yeah, we did forget that.
Because I was like, dude, firebelly on his 3 attacks is dumb.
Your weapon skill 3 firebelly that couldn't hit anything.
Couldn't hit anything.
I mean, I have an axe, but I don't know what to do with it.
It's like, I got this big old like maul with a literal boulder on the end of it. Now I got to use this axe. It's probably the size of like a dinner plate to him.
So good. So good. And then, ooh, designer note, no, these weapons are not intended to be balanced. Quite the opposite, in fact. It's a narrative event, right? We're not playing for any kind of balance. It's not meant to be a tournament. That's the whole point, is to go out there, pick up these ridiculous things and have fun. But yeah, so we only managed to get the one because Taylor looted the middle mausoleum turn 2.
Yep.
And I could not get to it turn 1 because I just not fast enough. So this scenario definitely favors those that are quick, but I should have paid more attention during deployment and had units with characters deploy like in line with the mausoleums. And I figured we could fight over the middle one, and I thought my combat could potentially be better. And then I remembered flails only work on the charge. For some reason, I had it in my head. I don't know why. I had it in my head that they got their strength bonus in the first round of combat, not only when you charged.
I thought it was the first round of combat.
I thought it was too.
Because that's how it used to be, right?
I guess so. I don't know. I think maybe that's why I got confused about it.
I don't know. I'm actually second guessing myself right now. You looked it up while we were playing, didn't you?
Yeah. Unless old world build is wrong, and then I'm going to be real upset because that would have been a lot more strength 5 attacks.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't have done nearly as well if that was the case.
It would have been a lot different. Strength 5, different. AP 1 instead of strength 3, AP nothing against ogres. Just massive difference.
Let's see. Flail during the first round of combat.
That must... Yep. Okay, so now
definitely not just charging.
It does say during the first round of combat. Now... in the core book, so let's check the most recent FAQ.
Oh, yeah, fair.
Because maybe it was changed in an FAQ and just didn't realize that.
That's totally fair. I should probably download these FAQs and keep them somewhere, like, easy to hold on to.
Yes, so it was, that was the FAQ. So that's what it was. I forgot that it was FAQ'd. Says, no, a flail strength modifier and armor bane 1 special rule apply only against models the wielder charged this turn.
Okay.
So they nerfed flails. I totally forgot that happened. That's huge.
Yeah, they did the same with halberds. AP minus 2 against enemy models of wielder charge this turn.
You always get the strength modifier, though.
Yep, and then morning stars are also strength modifier and armor bane 1 when they charge.
And I'm sure we talked about it in an episode with the FAQs.
And then forgot.
Forgot. Man, womp womp. That's so frustrating. Why did... I feel like they were like, man, Dan's already not great at this game, but he really likes it. So let's just make everything he likes worse. Poison, frenzy, flails all got insanely significantly worse.
Yeah, that's literally your entire Warriors of Chaos army.
Literally, like so many, like I had 31 flails on the table. I think I got to use the strength bonus once.
Yeah, you charged me once. And then my movement 6 was like, nah, I'm going to eat your face.
Thank goodness they clarified that pursuing counts as a charge. So you would still get your flails if you win combat and then pursue into like a fallback in good order unit, but not if they give ground. Nope. So if you win by too much and they give ground, you don't get your flails no more.
Womp womp.
I'm so upset by this.
I mean, you could just, depending on if it's your turn next or not, you could just not follow up.
Yeah, depending on what turn it is. But for them to win combat, they probably would have had to have charged and, you know.
You don't know that.
Access to the flails.
You don't know that.
You don't.
Yeah, strength 3, yeah, fair.
Better chance, you know. The worst part is, like, part of me wants to be like, all right, well, I'll just give them great weapons instead. And the flails are close enough. They'll count as great weapons. Berserkers can't take great weapons. They can only take additional hand weapons or flails.
Well, additional hand weapons and corn sounds great to me. That's what,
but 17 I have 20 attacks models with flails. Oh, yeah. They're also frenzied, so they only get that if they charge. They're only five, but like I said, I think they get charged once that game.
Well, again, it was...
There's certainly potential for them. This wasn't the game for them. They were the only ones that survived,
yeah,
but they were not good.
Yeah, I kind of chose combats. I was able to choose combats.
Well, yeah, again, your movement six. He also deployed his, what do you call them, duders, gorgers, were like right in front of me, and he got the first turn. So after they scouted, they just stood directly in front of my units, which basically wasted a turn of me moving because I don't think I killed any of them right away.
I think you killed one of them on the first turn, or it was on my turn with a follow-up. But one of them definitely died in the first round.
But it definitely got me like super stuck.
But the thing about them is they're unbreakable. So you got to kill it. Yep. You know?
Yep.
So I just completely took away your moving capability.
It was brutal. It was a game against Taylor, so it was super great fun. But like what happened in the game was just like, what is happening? So like one of the first things was... the Huskarls got a long bomb charge Taylor made with the Iron Guts and the Fire Belly with the BFA 9001. And he wrecked them in combat. I think you killed like six or seven of them. And I lost. He double outnumbered me. They broke. And I was like, it's fine. I'm exactly 12 inches from the board edge. I'm not going to do Swift Strike because I don't have to. I just have to not roll boxcars, and then they'll rally, and they'll be in the game later, and they'll charge with their flails, boxcars, off the table, gone. I think we scared the magic guys playing behind us, because it was like, oh my god, I just, what? It was ridiculous.
So that was one of those where you took your advice a little too literally of, oh, may your dice always roll sixes.
It wasn't a leadership test, so, yeah, that was the first moment where it was like, okay... Well, I mean, I had kind of a chance before, but this is not going well.
And then I was like, just la, 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 mincing through things. And the biggest thing that I was honestly scared of, to be perfectly honest with you, was those skin wolves, man. They scared the heck out of me.
I think by point score, they did the best because one unit killed the iron belchers.
Lead belchers. Yep.
Lead belchers. Which wasn't even worth their points. And then they came back, they charged something and all died.
Yeah, they killed one Mournfang.
Yeah, that's it. And then they got stomped by the Mournfang. The other unit were able to not really kill anything, but they took part of your units, a couple of your units kind of out of the game for a while because they were like chasing down the skin wolves. Yeah, it was a lot. There were a couple mistakes I made. A lot of it was really bad dicing and a big part was forgetting how flails worked.
Yeah. Yep.
Not realizing they had been changed. I just missed that.
Honestly, I think most of your issue was just dice.
Well, so after Frydahl died in a challenge against his tyrant, it took him like three turns to kill her, but it wasn't that long because I could not make a 4-up save.
Correct.
It was like, okay, 4-up armor because all you have is an iron fist. Oh, 2 2s and a 1. Great. Okay, 5-up ward save because it's chaos armor. Okay, more 2s. Perfect. I love that.
Love that for me.
I love that for me. She went down like a sack of bricks because I couldn't roll defense at all the whole game. I don't think she did a single damage to the
tyrant. She did one.
She did one, right?
Just one. Speak
through because she's strength 5. Hers isn't a flail, but it still says that she has to charge things to get the strength bonus. The only thing there was that it always has its AP of like 1 or 2.
Yep. Yeah. And I'm rocking a 4-up armor save and that's it. So
the best moment of the entire game was after Frydahl died. I was like, you know what? I'm going to roll Gaze of the Gods on my wizard. I don't usually bother with them, but what's the worst? He's stupid. Great.
And what's funny about that is the first time he's like, do I roll Gaze of the Gods on the wizard? And that's like turn 1. And I was like, I mean, if you want him to be stupid, yeah, go ahead.
And I was like, yeah, good point.
Three turns later.
So then he was currently in combat, so it didn't matter. And then they got out of combat. I think I finally won a round, or I fell back in good order, and it was my turn, so he didn't follow up. And I was like, yeah, it was my turn next, because I remember thinking, okay, I have this big unit of berserkers with the sorcerer of Nurgle in there. They have fleshy abundance, so their toughness 5, and they're right in front of 2 Mournfang. I had killed one somehow, miraculously. And I'm like, all I have to do is roll leadership 9. This is easy. I have a bonus to my leadership from something. I think I rolled an 11. So they just stood there picking their noses. Couldn't even cast spells. And I was like, but they're right in front of me. Come on. And then Taylor was like, sorry, charges in, kills a bunch more. So yeah, end the game with 14 berserkers on. No, that's, I didn't even take a picture at the end of the game. I wasn't like super salty about it, but it was like, people figured it out. Because picture I have still has the wizard. He died. I think I had like 11 berserkers left, just enough that he didn't get any points for them. So you only scored 1300 of my 1500 points.
Yeah. Whoopsies.
Then we realized that it didn't actually work that way. Based on the scenario rules that we just forgot to read.
I was just going to say, to get to the rest of the scenario. So we'll go back to the rest of the game here in just a minute. But the rest of those. So that one looted weapon that I got, if Dan somehow killed that Firebelly, if a character or champion possessing the looted weapon is removed from play, the weapon remains behind. You put a token down, and then anybody who moves over it, whether it's a character or a champion, picks it up. Should the character or champion have died in combat with an enemy unit which contains a character or champion, or a lone enemy character, the enemy character or champion may choose to immediately pick up the looted weapon, right? So these things are excruciatingly important, and they're actually what gets you victory points. Oops, we didn't realize that's how you got victory points, was looting the things and looting a weapon or something, right?
We didn't realize that was the only way to get victory points. We thought that was an addition to at first. We just didn't read it closely. So Brooks did put in a nice disclaimer. This is for avoidance of doubt. No victory points are awarded for any other purpose, e.g. dead or fled, captured banners, etc.
Yep. So because Brooks asked like how'd the game go, like who won, and I was like, oh, I got like 1800 victory points thanks to like the, you know, looted weapons and all that sort of stuff. And he goes, how'd you get that much?
That's not how that's supposed to work.
So anyway,
so really you had 300 victory points because you had a weapon and you looted a location. So we talked about how adding unit champions would have been huge in that game, particularly because I had 2 units of skin wolves, each with a skin wolf Jarl as a champion. So they could have run up to the ones on the flanks and been trying to loot those. And I could have potentially gotten 2 of those weapons.
Yep.
And like I said, I could have deployed better anyway and put a character in one of my units more in line with one of those mausoleums instead of just trying to fight you for the middle one. In retrospect, not the best move.
Well, I think it also, we kind of get tunnel vision of like, hey, we haven't played in a while and now we get to play a game again and now we're just excited to play Warhammer, so let's deploy and go.
Yeah.
Whereas absolutely, we should really just like read the rules and scenario stuff before we start playing.
We just didn't realize there was that stipulation.
Yeah.
We just assumed that we'd have normal victory points. Just didn't pay close enough attention to that. But it was a blast of a game. It was ridiculously fun. I still want to bring Wolves of the Sea to the event, but I did change up my list pretty significantly to make it a better list. It still has a ton of flails. Don't worry. I haven't given up on flails.
Oh, thank goodness.
Because I love flails. I'm still going to love them. So I took out Frydahl, put in a Chaos Lord, because it was like, if I'm going to have a punchy character, they should just be real punchy, right? Yep.
And if you're not going to ambush, what's the point?
Yeah, why am I bothering with her? I'll probably use her model, because I don't really have another one at the moment to represent a Chaos Lord, so it'll probably be her on the table, but you know. And then she's got, or the Chaos Lord here is the Mark of Nurgle, because I think that's the best mark mechanically. If you roll 6s to hit, you got to re-roll them. That saved me 5 hits the whole game. And I think
it sure did.
There were 2 or 3 times that you rolled
re-rolled it, into
rerolled into another hit anyway. But then she also, they also have the Talisman of the Carrion Crown. So they have poisoned attacks and regen 5+. Favor of the Gods. So I get to reroll that time I roll stupid. And then the Chaos Rune Sword, which is awesome. For 45 points, you get strength +1. So strength 6, AP 1, magic attacks, +1 weapon skill, +1 initiative.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
I think it's a fantastic weapon. So it makes them weapon skill 8, initiative 7, strength 6, AP 1. AP 1's not fantastic, but the rest of it's worth it.
So Dan, I want to just be careful, because if your champion has, or your Chaos Lord has Mark and Nurgle, then whatever unit you put them in also needs to have Mark and Nurgle.
So he would have to join the Chaos Marauders.
Yeah.
Because the Berserkers can't take a mark.
They're just Mark of Khorne, right?
No, they don't have a mark. They're a Mark of Undivided.
Well, they're undivided.
They can't take a mark, which I don't understand.
Wait a second. What? They're Berserkers. That's stupid.
Yeah.
That's dumb.
Yep. They have Mark of Chaos Undivided in their special rules, and they don't have any other choices for that.
That's silly.
I could give them throwing axes, though.
Ooh, I almost did that with my dudes that can also do that. Rangers.
So I toned my sorcerer down because the level 3, even at a level 3, just couldn't get much done at all. His level 2 kept dispelling me anyway. Sure. And I can't take a Chaos Lord and a Sorcerer Lord at 1500. So I dropped it down to just a level 2 Exalted Sorcerer with the spell Familiar. So he has an extra spell and Mark of Nurgle. I just realized he has a light armor. I wonder if that's something I could change. No, he comes with light armor. So he's not not nearly as defensive, but it is Chaos Armor 5+. So he does have a 6+, 5+. But I gave him battle magic just because I feel like every time I play and I don't use battle magic, I'm like, man, I wish I just used battle magic. It just seems objectively better, you know?
So I think that's where I was trying to bring it up, is your Chaos Lord, or your Sorcerer joined the unit of Berserkers, and it was a Nurgle Sorcerer.
I cheated, I guess.
You cheater! I win.
Forgot. I couldn't do that. You already did! By a lot! It didn't help. I cheated, but it didn't even help me. And I put that Sorcerer on a horse.
And
Mark of Nurgle on a Chaos Steed, so he's going to join the Huskarls that are also Mark of Nurgle. Nice. And that way my Sorcerer is more mobile. For Fleshy Abundance, he's definitely going to be in a unit. Yep. You know, things like that should make it a bit better that way. And then I took a Marauder Tribe Chieftain with Mark of Nurgle, a BSB, and Demonic Plate Mail. Actually I have a BSB. I failed so many leadership things that I want to do that. Mostly to make that the one unit of 22 Marauders with Hand Weapon and Shield are just going to have really good static combat res.
Yeah.
And then he, you know, in there with a BSB as well. And the Demonic Plate Mail is full plate armor, which is nice on Battle Standard Bearer. And it makes him toughness and initiative +1.
Wow. Toughness +1 is dope.
Yeah, it makes him toughness 5. It doesn't give him any more. He's still only 2 wounds, but toughness 5, 4 up armor, and 6 up ward for Chaos Armor is pretty nice.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's not bad. And he has Rallying Cry, which is a big deal, potentially. Hey, I used it for the first time in that game.
Yep. So I'll go over my Expeditionary Force. It's probably terrible, but I don't care. What's up?
I'm going to finish.
Are you not done yet?
I'm going to finish my list.
That was your characters. Wolves.
Because I did change things quite a bit. I have, I kept the unit of Marauders the same, 22, Mark of Nurgle, light armor, shields. It's 22 just because of points. Mm-hmm. And then I broke up the Berserkers to give them potentially more chances to charge. Instead of a big block of 20, they're 3 units of 6.
Yeah, I like that.
With flails and light armor. And that way, and they can skirmish. They have open order and skirmish naturally, so they can just kind of jump around, you know, potentially hitting things.
And then movement 5?
Yeah, movement 5. So they'll be much more maneuverable. And just hope to get more charges so they can make use of frenzy and flails. Huge. My 5 Marauder Horsemen. Oh,
Dan, pick me.
65 points for the 5 of them after all that painting. Yes, sir.
You can give them ambush.
I can. That is a true statement. And then I have 10. The Huskarls are the same flails, heavy armor, mark of Nurgle. I did give them a war banner, which they may have had already, and I forgot about, but that'll help with combat. But again, I really want them to charge because they have flails. And then the skin wolves, I made up some points by taking just a single unit of four skin wolves.
Four skin wolves?
Just four skin wolves.
Okay. Not two units of three. How many are there?
No, I took the one unit down to get some points back to do other things like take characters. So I only have one unit of four skin wolves.
Okay, cool. Perfect. Well, that's that sounds like a solid list, especially cool. That last unit there.
Also, I didn't put a champion in the skin wolves.
You should.
I need to make points to have a champion and just free up 7 points. Now that we changed those rulings.
Yeah.
It's way more. Get rid of one marauder. There we go. 21 marauders. That's one less marauder I have to paint.
Heck yeah.
My four skin wolves have a champion now.
And I can't wait to see your skin wolf champion with a BFA because that's going to be hilarious.
Oh my God. Can you imagine? He's got like five. And then I can just give him another attack. So he has 5+D6 attacks.
Yeah. With no armor. Five. Strength +4.
So strength good. First. Strength 8. I want this to happen now.
I hate this so much. He's going to pull the Lost Ark or the Found Ark. He's just going to shoot the whole time.
He's going to pull the mortar, and he's got like Ballista Skill nothing. Or
Ballista Skill Dwarf? Dang.
Yeah, I think it is Ballista Skill Dwarf. Let me double check. They are Ballistic Skill nothing. They have no Ballistic Skill, so it's a dash. So that's absolutely what I would roll. I mean, it'd still be worth victory points, but it'd be like, great, I picked up this awesome thing that doesn't work. That would be so, so typical.
You. It would be so you. So I don't remember if we did the victory points thing, but each looted weapon controlled at the end of the game is 200 VPs, and each mausoleum that was looted is 100 points, which is great. But I'll go over my expeditionary force, which I should have brought. Brooks has a lot of the minis for me because Brooks is the best. Thanks, Brooks.
Brooks is awesome. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I love hanging out with that guy immensely. Oh my gosh. Oh, I have Brooks sneakers. They're fantastic. And
Why did you steal his sneakers?
Listen, the guy left his sneakers at Pizza Land, and I was like, these are mine. We went to Pizza Land with Brooks the last time he was over here.
Yeah,
and we were driving by Pizza Land the other day because we were going to get some ice cream with family.
Whoa.
And
you didn't say hi to me.
I didn't. I'm sorry. Right. It was a little memorial get together. It was a family affair.
Okay, fair.
And the kids were like, Pizza Land? I was like, yeah. And my kids were like, that's where we went with Daddy's friend. He was cool. I was like, yeah, Brooks is dope. Anyways, so my expeditionary list is led by an engineer. Surprise, surprise. With a handgun, and that's it. Super cheap at 58 points. And then Then we have another engineer who has a handgun. He's an expeditionary marksman. And then he has the master rune of bursting flame and the rune of rapid fire, which everyone knows about this combo. You get two shots, which have quick shot. And then each successful hit is 2d3 hits rather than one.
I don't want to hear you complain one bit about my list if you're taking Beardy Harry there.
I got Beardy Harry, baby. And then we have two engineer sappers because these guys just seem like a lot of fun. One has a rune of accuracy, which means he takes zero negatives to shooting. And then the other
have that on Beardy Harry. Okay.
No, you can. No. You can't take. So it's the expeditionary ranger makes it so he doesn't take penalties from movement and shooting.
Oh.
And then the rune of rapid fire and the master rune of bursting flame. That's Beardy Harry.
Oh, okay.
Yep. And then my other engineer sapper has a handgun and then rune of accuracy and rune of concussive force, which I cannot wait to use against Dan because I know the first round Dan and I are getting paired up, which is any unit with the hit with an attack made by this weapon is stupid until the next start of turn subbase.
Oh, what? You know I'm going to fail that every time, though.
Every time. I did take two units of 10 Thunderers. I have since condensed them today into one unit of 16 Thunderers because I can only make one unit expeditionary marksman, so they don't take penalties for movement and shoot. And they are tooled up. They have a handgun each, or they have a veteran, excuse me, a standard bearer. I gave them great weapons and shields. So they are my range dudes as well as my fighting force. I got 10 rangers with a champ and a standard bearer, and I was really considering the rune of battle to give them plus one combat result. Because these guys, right? These guys are my scouts, my skirmishers, with great weapons and shields and crossbows and throwing axes and hand weapons.
Why do you have so many things? That's too much things.
It's so many things. I think I actually tooled them out because I was trying to make core points. I'm going to have to tool them back a little bit. But anyways.
Oh, fair, fair.
The reason that I wanted to give them the banner rune is just in case I get a flank charge with them. What? You're dealing with 10 rangers with great weapons that have 3 static combat res because flank, banner, banner, which just sounds fun to me. Anyways, 2 cannons. They both have form over function. One has no runes. The other one has the rune of accuracy. Rune of forging. That's what it is.
Forging.
15 miners, champ or full command, and a steam drill, and no other upgrades. I was thinking about veterans, but we'll see if that pays off. 10 miners with just a champ and a steam drill, and an organ gun with form over function. So form over function reduces their toughness by 1, but then they lose move or shoot. So I can skirt around with my little organ guns and my movement 3 Darfies.
Wow, they're so fast.
They're so fast.
So fast.
So I am going to be ambushing with this list because it's using it's using the old minor ambush rules where you put coins on the table and then you get to place them anywhere within a certain amount of range of those coins.
Okay, fair. That's a great move because that's just cool.
It's just cool, man. Cool, and the steam drill makes it so I can reroll that ambush roll as well. For 25 points, which is so expensive, but then it's also a great weapon.
How great is it?
Let's see. It is strength plus 3, AP 3, furious charge. So it's pretty great.
Yo, furious charge is good because it doesn't have a downside. Like it's frenzy, but with no penalty.
Yeah, so that'll be the prospector. That would be 3 attacks at strength 6, AP minus 3 with weapon skill 4. That's not bad for a dwarf. Not bad for a dwarf, but I got a couple of tweaks that I need to do to the list, but that is more or less what I'm going to be taking. I'm glad that I'm taking a big unit of Thunderers, which I'm probably just going to run 8 wide so I can get 8 shots with no minuses to moving and shooting. I don't feel like being a jerk. but that should be fun. It'll be like one of my first times. It'll be my second time playing a shooting list for dwarves. Because the first
second time in old world
playing a unit shooting crazy. List for dwarves. Hopefully maybe at some point you and I can get a practice game in, but we'll see. Get another practice game in, that is.
That'd be nice. I don't know, but have 2 weeks ish to be able to do that.
That's pushing it.
I think it's actually 3 weeks, but
with everything that's coming up, that's pushing it.
That's a lot of things.
It's a lot of things.
This time of year is always so busy.
It's a lot of things. I might be able to the 25th. We'll see. Anyways.
What's the 25th?
Yeah, that's it. That's the Beards, Ears, and Skulls treasure hunt event, which again is October 4th, 10-4, good buddy, in Amesbury, Massachusetts. We're going to be there. Brooks is going to be there. He's running the darn thing. Dr. D is going to be there. And there's only 2 slots left. At time of recording, there's only 2 tickets left out of, I think it was like 15 or 16, which is pretty incredible. I'm super excited. I can't wait. It's going to be a blast.
Yeah, I'm really, really excited for it. And we're going to be probably driving out that morning and staying over that night. So, you know, maybe a bunch of us will go out to dinner afterwards or something.
Yeah, I really hope so. The event is supposed to end around 8-ish, but I'm going to be so jonesed to have some food and just hang out with some people. So this will be a blast.
I'm always jonesed to have food. I love food.
Dude, the best thing about food is that it exists and I get to eat it. It's incredible. I'm so excited about eating food.
It exists?
But anyways, folks, I think that's all we've got for today. Thanks for being here. Thanks for loving me. Thanks for listening to our crazy shenanigans. Did I close my plugs and fillers? I did. Oh my gosh.
How dare you?
Hey, head over to professionalcasual.com and join all of our everything. You can follow us on all the stuff there, including our Discord. There should be a link to the Discord in there, as well as the show notes. Come hang out with us. We're having a blast. Start playing .games if you want to hang out with Dan. Dan, are you still doing games?
Yeah, I had one this morning.
Oh, yeah, that's right. So start playing .games. Look for Bad GM Dan if you want Dan to GM your games. Even though he says he's a bad GM, he's real good.
Thanks. Currently, yeah. I've got every other Wednesday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, is the All Wizards Cult Arcane campaign that we are, I would guess, maybe halfway-ish through, maybe a little less than halfway through.
Oh my gosh. But it sounds like so much fun.
A couple more people can join into that. And then Sunday mornings, 9 a.m. Eastern, I have our Ubersreich Adventures campaign that we are just about finished up with the first Ubersreich Adventures book, which is pretty cool. And I'm going to start running adventures out of Ubersreich Adventures 2. I think at the moment there's one seat open in that, if somebody wanted to join that. And then just, you know, you can follow me as a GM on there to get like updates whenever I post other stuff. I have a Cosmere RPG game open currently that just waiting for seats to fill for that. That's the Stormlight Archives RPG.
Oh, nice. I need to read that.
It's really cool. I'm waiting for my Kickstarter stuff to come in. I haven't got my notification yet, but I know it's any day.
Any day now.
Any day.
Twitch.tv/professionalcasualnetwork, where Ben is streaming right now, not Dr. D. Ben's playing some Silk Song. Jeepers.
You good?
You can head over there and watch all of our stuff. Oh, yeah, the Power Phase on Tuesdays. I don't think we're doing one this coming Tuesday. I think Tim's going to be out, but you're streaming?
Tim's got stuff. I got a plan.
Uh-huh.
I need chat to help me not be the worst at Marvel Rivals. I'm going to try that out, which reminds me, I have to actually get it on Steam. I don't know if I have it or not. It's free to play, though.
My thing for you is just play Venom and you'll be good to go. Just always play Venom.
I'll probably just beat Jeff the whole time and just see how many times can people kill the little shark dog.
Shark dog boy. P.O. Box G.
I love Jeff.
He is the best. He's the goodest boy.
And I love how much Tim hates Jeff.
He just eats people and throws them up. It's the friggin' best.
Blech.
P.O. Box G, West Oneonta, New York, 13861. If you feel like sending us stuff as well as things, you can address it to the network. And then 603-803-3235.
Call it.
You want to call it, text it, whatever you want. Tim usually gets those, so he'll send them off to us. Leave us a review. 5-star review would be great. Apple Podcast or Audible. It really helps people find the show. So help us grow our Electric Casuals in the best way we know possible, which is by letting people know that, they should listen to us. Anyways, Dan.
Hi.
Is there any changes you want to make to your usual sign off?
May your dice ever roll sixes unless it's a leadership test or you really don't want to go too far.
That was perfect. Good job.
Yeah, nailed it.
All right. Love y'all. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks so much for listening. If you enjoyed this show, check out all the other great shows here at the Professional Casual Network. Like what, Danny?
I'll tell you. On Mondays, we've got the Lost Omens podcast, our Pathfinder 2E actual play, hosted by me, playing through the Extinction Curse AP. Also, streaming on twitch.tv/professionalcasualnetwork at 7 p.m. Eastern time, you can check out, the Power Phase, our Marvel Crisis Protocol live battle report show. On Tuesdays, the podcast version of Wait, Did I Roll a Wild? Our Marvel Crisis Protocol Povlog is available. On Wednesdays, alternating releases on the Patreon, we have Settling the Southlands, our homebrew Wolfthorpe actual play, and The Slithering, a Pathfinder 2nd edition actual play.
and on Thursdays, live at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on twitch.tv/professionalcasualnetwork. We've got our Marvel Crisis Protocol povlog.
You can also check out back episodes of Elite Eight Showdown and the first 39 episodes of the Lost Omens podcast, the first 24 episodes of Settling the Southlands, and the first handful of episodes of The Slithering on the YouTube at youtube.com/theprofessionalcasual.